Welcome to the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Live. I'm Walter Latham. I'm your host, and I'm joined by your co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. Today we want to just not go as deep as we normally would go, so granular, detailed. We want to have a little fun because we do have a lot of our panelists out, and Michelle will be introducing the panel that's here. So some of the wise people, the geniuses, are not here today for various reasons. Okay. Today, we want to go back. We want to go way back, which I can do. And I think a few of y'all guys can, if you tell the truth, to growing up during the 60s and 70s. Right? Life was valuable. And discipline was upfront and community driven. I would imagine that if the abuse or corporate punishment laws that they have in effect today were in effect then I think a lot of us would be orphans, right? We would have been up for adoption because our parents would have been in jail. But anyway, I mean, that was all for our good. And I think that the way we grew up and what I see and the people around me that are on the team here, you know, they're great. They're great people, you know, they owe that to their parents. All right. So before I go any further, I just want to say a couple of things. If y'all guys like this podcast, please subscribe. It's very important that you subscribe, not just like, but subscribe. Okay. And you can subscribe to this podcast because, you know, this is a live show. But on Sundays, you can find us wherever you get your podcast. Whether that be Apple Podcasts, Google Play, doesn't matter. Find us and subscribe. We would definitely appreciate it so that we can continue to do the good works that we are doing. And I think you'll find value in what we offer. Okay? All right. So anyway, Michelle?
Yes, I'm excited about this topic too. I'm a 70s baby. thank you, Walter, and good evening, everyone. Okay. And welcome to the Friday Live show. Thank you to our live audience for joining us. Please follow the Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking on the share button below. Today's Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. His music can be found on all streaming platforms. So today we have Judy C. Andrews out of Brooklyn, New York. She is a poet and an author and our newest panel member. Welcome, Judy. We also have Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey, retired sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roo's Smokehouse. Walter, I'm excited. So let's get into our childhood because we were definitely, Judy, you can vouch for that. We were all raised differently from what they are now. No, not at all. So goodness. We got the big mama. We got that big mama training. Right?
Damn right. Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
Definitely.
Right. But anyway.
So let's start with you, Walter, because you're a little ahead of our generation. So
I'll bring it up from the rear. Okay.
Definitely.
All right. So anyway, yeah. All right. Yeah, as the day's title indicates, the way it was. I was raised in the 60s and the 70s. Okay. And I came from a very small town down in eastern North Carolina near Greenville. All right. And, you know, the neighborhood, we had about 2,000, maybe 2,200 people in the town. You know, at 9 p.m. at night, everything was shut down. Everybody went to bed. And we had three TV channels, ABC, NBC, wow. CBS. All right. And at 11 o'clock, the Star Spangled Banner played, and that was it. No TV after that, after 11 p.m.
Wow. We are spoiled.
I'm telling you. Oh, man, nothing. There was nothing, you know. And there were no games and stuff like y'all guys have now. All right?
Right.
You know, I used to have men, you know, the little plastic men. That do, you know, there was.
No, we had games. We had to make them up and play with ourselves.
That's what I'm saying. Or at least you, there you go. There you go. So anyway, I want to get into more, but I'm going to open up with that and then go into some of the other stuff. But a small town. And the only thing that we were scared of were ghosts. We weren't scared of real people. And my mom used to say, look, boy, you know, you got to be scared of the real folks, not the ghosts. The ghosts not going to bother you. But
especially during that era.
Just, it was a simple time and it was a lot of fun, but we, you know, I don't want to jump ahead. All right. But I want to let y'all guys say a little bit about how you and how your environment was when you were small growing up.
Well, I guess I'll start. This is Judy. I grew up in a good home at first, and then I ended up in foster care. And it was not a great childhood, but I was around so many women that were so powerful and influential in my life that I was able to thrive because everyone in the neighborhood, pretty much looked out for you when you did something good and when you did something bad. I had a difficult experience from ages 5 to 18. within those experiences, there was a foundation set, and that was the church. And you know, you went to school, and then after school, you went to the community church or your neighborhood church, and then you stayed there until maybe a little after dinner time. Then you went home, and you had your little snack, you did your homework, and you didn't go out to hang out from Monday to Friday. And you had chores on Saturday. And after you finished your chores, you were able to do whatever you wanted to do, but you had to still be in before it got dark. So I had to be in when the sun went down. And if I wasn't, there was a scream coming from a window, screaming my name and embarrassing me. You better get up here. You know, the lights are out and you better come in. And then Sunday, we were in church all day. I was in every home I was in church all day.
Yeah, go to Sunday school first.
Sunday school, right after Sunday school, there was the young adult school. Then there was choir, if you were in the choir. I can't sing, but I was in the choir. I don't know how they put me in the choir, but I was in the choir. And that foundation really helped me later on in life to know that when things were going bad, I knew that I could pray. I knew that I could talk to God. Even when I was 8, you know, I didn't find out until I was much older, though, but my parents were Catholic and I didn't know they were Catholic. And we were playing Run, Catch, and Kiss, you know, on a Sunday morning when we were not supposed to be. But I was outside playing Run, Catch, and Kiss, and we ran into a church. There were, you know, several kids and they were serving communion. We ran up on the communion line having no idea what was going on. I was about 7. And I had no idea what was going on. And the priest, an African-American man, anointed us with oil and blessed our lives at 7 years old.
Okay.
And we thought we were going to get in trouble, but we didn't get in trouble. We didn't get yelled at. It was such a care for children. Children were really cared for and comforted. You weren't always yelled at unless you really did something terrible. And you were spoken, well, I was spoken to very kindly, but there were still difficult times for other reasons that we'll go into. That foundation was there, the foundation. And I think that's what's lacking today with a lot of the children. No one is saying you better do this or else. It's sort of like I see kids get on the bus and they go, I'm going to sit here. And their mother goes, okay, honey, go on and sit there. If I did that, my mother said, no, you're sitting right here. Do not tell me where you're going to sit. You're going to sit right here. So that foundation of respect is not there anymore.
Yeah, that's a key. Know? That's one of the things, you know, before we go, you know, with Michelle and Chris, because y'all guys are jumping ahead. I think I should have just stayed on point. Mm-hmm. But let me go back on point real quick, guys, and just talk about the neighborhood and how I grew up, the environment, and, you know, the substantial mm-hmm. difference between then and now. Okay. As I said, 2,200 mm-hmm. people. We had the black neighborhood and we had the white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We had the White City Boys, which I grew up in White City, which was a nickname for the sandy land. It was very sandy, white sands and stuff. And then you had the down the hill people. All right. And in between the two was what we call Uptown. All right. It had one theater. You had a few stores like Belt Tyler's. All right. And this is in the 60s. Okay. So this was pre-integration. And if you look at the show photo, you see me in the fifth grade. I was in Miss Boston's class. It was all black. All right. And to tell you the truth, we had a great, I mean, I loved it. Okay. But I did see integration come, and it came in phases. All right. First, you had what they call freedom of choice. All right. And my grandma, she volunteered me to go to the white school for 1 year, you know, prior to total integration. So I went 1 year and I had a lot of fights, but then I found out there's a lot of good, you know, white folks out there. You know, I had white friends, even though I was, I mean, when you talk about a minority, I was the minority, man. I was one black in all my classes. I was the only black person. Okay. But, you know, with that said, I had the races, and where I grew up is, you know, a white person can tell you and you can tell them, I don't like you. N word. And we would say, I don't like you. C word. All right. C word for cracker. I don't like you, cracker. And you went your separate ways. You know, you had the understanding. So you don't cross my lane. I don't cross yours. Okay. So we had our own neighborhood. We were entrepreneurs. My grandma, my mom had a store. You know, we had dry cleaners. We had everything within the neighborhood. And the only time we had to go outside the neighborhood was to get big ticket items. Like if you want a TV, stereo, or something like that. Then you went outside the neighborhood. And we didn't have any problem, all right, with integration. All right, only time, and guys, I know you're going to laugh. Only time that I had a problem was, I think I was maybe 9, 10 years old. It was hot. All right. And our town had one swimming pool, and it was a white swimming pool. Okay. And I started marching with the civil rights people. You know, I was about 9, 10 years old, throwing rocks and bottles because I wanted to go to the swimming pool. And it was mandated, a law passed, that since it was a public facility, you know, they had to accept blacks. So I packed up my towel and my slipper, you know, whatever, flip-flops, whatever, and everything, and went and stood online to go into this swimming pool in town. Do you know they closed the place while we were online? They closed it and it never opened up again.
Wow, because they weren't ready for integration.
They weren't. And I was hot. It was so hot down there, Michelle, and y'all guys know it. We were trying to dig a pool from the dirt.
Oh, wow.
All right. So, and, you know, it was, and going back to the church thing, you know, I was raised a Baptist, okay? And I had to go to Sunday school every Sunday, okay? I didn't have to go to church, but I had to go to Sunday school. I had to go to, but when I went to church, I had to go with Ma. And we would sit down, you know, in the pews. And then, you know, the happy time would come, the preacher would be jumping up and down, the choir would be singing. And I'm looking at Ma, you know, and I'm cutting my eye at her because I hope she doesn't jump up and start shouting. That was my worry. You know, Ma going to shout. And soon I said, oh, Ma, come on now, you know. And the next thing you know, Ma was all over the place shouting, the hat going, you know, that Sunday. Y'all guys know what I'm talking about. But don't mess with her. You know, Mom was like this. You know, I was looking at Richard Pryor the other night, and he was talking about when you get a whooping. All right. I know y'all guys got these stories too.
Go pick up that switch.
Yeah. I mean, she said, okay.
Mine was an ironing cord, but anyway.
You were lucky. Yeah, I mean, you were lucky. When you have to, when Mom said to tell me, all right, go out there and get me a switch, boy. All right. And don't bring me a small
one. Don't bring a small one. That's
right. Don't bring a small one now. All right. And you be crying, but you be looking up at the tree and you're saying to yourself, oh man, is this too small? If I get this one, she's going to come out and get it. You don't want her to come out and get it herself now. But then you get the switch and you come in and, you know, and you got a whooping. And you know, what do you say? I'm not going to do it anymore. And you started jumping and running around. Boy, my goodness. But anyway, that's the way it was.
That's funny. No different from mine. But, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, Coney Island, I was born in the 60s. I hate to tell my age, but it is what it is. In the 70s, you know, it was community. You know, we had versatility in Coney Island. Mm-hmm. You know, we had, we didn't know different races. You know, we just, we were friends. We didn't look at each other like, oh, you're Spanish, you're this, you're that, you're white, you're black. You know, I didn't have that at an early age, but when I got to junior high school, I did experience it. And this is when Roots came out. One of my friends at school, supposedly a friend, a white kid, you know, used the N-word on me. And that was the first time I ever, you know, had to deal with discrimination. But my childhood, you know, my siblings didn't get what the older kids got. We, you know, similar to Judy, going to church, doing what we had to do as children. It was all community related. We, you know, it took a village to raise children back then. And it really did. So to me, the times then, I think the 60s and 70s, even though you had your civil rights movement, we were raised better in the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah, I agree.
Definitely raised better because, you know, they had different values, you know, and they disciplined their children. They taught us. The kids these days, they have no clue. You know, we were talking about it the other day, and we were saying everything is changing as far as the MTA. With, you know, you don't have any toll booths anymore. Remember, Walter, you don't have this, you don't have that.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
This generation of children or young adults, they're lazy as hell.
Yes, they
you know,
are.
they don't drive. They, you know, everything is Uber Eats.
Yeah,
they don't. Right. They don't have cable. Everything is the internet. You know, it's just a different, they don't have to do much to survive. And they, you know, they don't, mm-hmm. they don't know what it is to survive. They have, like you said, the video games. We had to make up Hopscotch, Skelly, you know, all of these games. You had to learn how to, that's how we learned how to socialize.
Yeah, we had to be creative.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, we had to be creative. These kids have no clue. You take their phones away, they are totally lost. Without their phones. I mean, I kind of feel like I'm the same way, but I know a lot of phone numbers by heart. If I had to use a rotary phone, I could do it. You know, a lot of these, they don't have the mentality to realize that these things are privileged. And once you lose them, you know, what do you do from there? But my childhood, I had a great childhood. You know, we had to be in before that light post went off.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When that light came on, we knew we had to be in the house. You know, it was just a different kind of discipline. You know, I had church, you know, I was on the choir. We did after school programs. We had community centers. We had more community back then because it was more of a fight for it back then. Right.
Yes.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, because a lot of people back in the 60s and 70s had a lot of kids, you know, especially in the inner cities. And, you know, you had, like you said, division, but the South was different. They had their white section. You had your black sections. For the inner city, you had, you know, like your suburbs, and you had the ghettos, you know, it's the same thing, it's just called different.
Right.
You know, I must say my childhood was great. I'm not going to complain about it because it took a village. And, you know, before I even got home, if I got in trouble at school, I got two beatings before I got home. You know, the neighbors were allowed to discipline you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't even come up to someone's child and say anything without the mother beating your ass, you know, so to speak, excuse my expression, but, you know, you follow a stupid kid home, a stupid parent's going to answer the door. So it's like, it's totally different from what it was from when we were raised. The value of family is not there. The value of community is a big difference. Big difference.
Right. And the
value
of service.
Did your mother ever tell you that she's not going to beat her clothes? Or your father? Not. When you got a whooping? She tell you, okay, I'm not going to beat you now because I don't want to beat the clothes that I just bought you to go to school.
Yeah, wait till you're naked or
get that
else on. But I must say, we did not get a lot of beatings, you know.
No, I didn't either.
You learned your lesson back then. You don't want to get the belt. You don't want to get the strap. You don't want to get the extension cord. You don't want to get
the
high heel. So we learn lessons quick.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
I never learned. I was a troublesome guy.
Well, some people just don't.
Oh, boy.
I didn't like whooping one time. Right.
Yep. You told me once. That was it. I got the lesson because it hurt too much. I don't like pain. So I said, I got it.
No, I just tried not to get caught.
It's true. But I think the value is that, you know, the difference between then and now, you had big mamas raising you. You had people that care to teach you things, you know, our parents talk to us more then. Now you don't have, you know, the parents don't communicate because they're working 2 and 3 jobs just to keep those kids in the Nikes or whatever the situation is, or it's a single parent home, but they don't have value teaching anymore. Like, you know, my parents was taught a certain way. They taught me that way. I taught my son that way. I think my son got like one major beating. That was it. I didn't have to talk to him twice. Like, I taught him the way my parents taught me. So I think it's has a lot to do with the parents as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to the whoopings. Yeah. I didn't learn, you know,
I didn't learn.
I was just always, you know, always getting a whooping. You know, mom tell me, okay, you be back. No, she tell me, don't go to that swimming hole. Mm-hmm. All right. And I'll come home, my clothes all wet. And then she said, did you go to the swimming hole? And I told you not to. And don't lie. Mm-mm. And yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
Chris. Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
All right. So I'm a little younger than Michelle. I was the second to last of 8, right?
Oh, okay.
So I think my parents got a little tired when they got to us.
That was because of Michelle.
No, that was because of my older brother, Reggie.
I was getting ready to say Reggie.
Yeah. He wore them out.
But I was born in the late 60s, so I kind of started growing, you know, late 70s is when it really was my time, right? I could get outside and hang out and do some things. So late 70s into the 80s, right? And things were starting to change in the 80s, you know, rap music was becoming more prominent. So things were changing a little bit. But for me, I, you know, having a lot of brothers and sisters, so I had a lot of people that told me what to do, you know, not just my parents. Then I had my 6 older siblings telling me what to do. So it kind of kept us in line. And the one thing I remember most about my childhood was my dad taking me to work every weekend. I didn't get an allowance. My father said, I don't give allowance. I give pay. Right. If you want money, you got to work for it. And we would have to get up probably 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. And he would, you know, he was an electrician. So he would do side jobs on the weekend and he would take me and my brother and he would teach us the trade. And he would teach us if you do a day's work, you get a day's pay. That was his thing.
Right.
And he always paid us and he paid me fair. Like he didn't pay me some small potatoes. I made good money when I went to work with him, but he wanted to instill that in me and let me know that you got to get what you're worth when you go out there. And it starts here with me teaching you what you're worth. You don't work for less than anybody else. So that was an important role that was important for me because I took that with me throughout my life. And I understood that I had to work. He didn't buy me expensive sneakers. My parents didn't do that. Listen, they had 8 kids. It was tough. You know, right. It wasn't easy to buy those things, but he told me, if you want those things, you gotta go get a job and get them yourself. So my parents didn't have to be, I think I remember getting one beating and it was a pretty, my mom beat the mess out of me. It was pretty rough. I think she used the extension cord or one of the cords. And I remember my brothers and sisters kind of feeling sorry for me. But that was the last time I ever got a beating. My dad never hit me. He didn't have to. His voice carried.
Right.
When he spoke, we knew it meant business. Nobody got out of line. We did what we had to do. So I had a great childhood growing up in the 80s, going to school in the 80s. It was fun. It was the things that I imagine some of the things that went on that are going on now happened back then. But when you're in it and you live in it, you don't recognize it, right? But I walked to school as a 10-year-old. I walked to school. I walked home. I was a latchkey kid. My mom worked. Right. You know, we didn't have to worry about the things that we got to worry about now. And I also realized something. These kids are so attached to electronics and technology.
Yes.
We didn't have that. I was in a band in junior high school. I played instruments. You know, we played sports.
Right.
We were always doing something. We were very active. And I think that helped us socially. So I'm not going to say that we didn't have people that might have been a little off or depressed or had some mental illness, but it wasn't such an abundance of people. And I think that was because we played and we experienced things and we had fun and we lived life. It wasn't so heavy for us. If you notice on a Saturday morning, there aren't Saturday morning cartoons on. It's no. News programs. Yeah. There's nothing for these children to wind down with, to relax, because they're on their tablets, they're on their phones, they're taking in too much information that they're really not ready for. And I think that could be part of the reason why we have these kids are so fragile emotionally, and they have mental health issues because they don't know how, they don't have an outlet. They don't talk. You know, they could be in the same room and they're texting each other. They don't have a conversation. Nobody's speaking to each other. Yes, these things, if you look back and see that we had those things, we weren't wealthy. We didn't have a lot of money, but we still found a way to have a lot of fun, to laugh, and had a good time. I miss those years. I had a great childhood. It wasn't good. It was great.
You were blessed, man. You were blessed.
That's right. Truly blessed.
You know? Yeah. You were blessed. I know when you mentioned your father took you to work with him to show you how to earn a dollar. I know we had a grocery store, right? And I had to work in there on the weekends. So Ma said, "Oh, you got to work in the store." I said, "Well, Ma, I don't get paid." She said, "Look, you're working for yourself. So why are you going to get paid? Mm. Right? You don't get paid.
Right.
All right. Go cut that wood, you know? I mean, I always had chores too. All right. But I didn't get paid because I worked for myself. So what I used to do is I could refuse to go in there. All right. Sometimes I used to go work in tobacco when I was like 12, 13 years old. I graduated tobacco that you used to smoke. I used to work where they grew it. All right. I used to first start off with handing tobacco. Everybody standing around a cart full of tobacco. You hand it to somebody that would tie it, put it on a rod. All right. Once that rod was full, you had somebody call a hanger when they were hanging up in the barn. I used to do that. Then you had people that used to break tobacco off the stalk. I used to do that just to have cash money because that mom didn't pay me. So I used to work on the farm in the summertime. Okay. Until I had enough money to when the fair came around, I had plenty of cash so I could have a good time. Okay. But everything was work. You had to work. As you said, Chris, we knew the value of a dollar. And if you didn't work, you were broke.
And if you try to tell these kids to work now, they give you hell. They don't want to do it. Oh, well, times are different. You're too old fashioned. No, you need to learn how to earn and what it, you know, you need to understand the cost, the price that people pay to get these things for you. It's not so easy to, you know, it's not easy to come by this stuff. And you guys don't appreciate it. You don't understand. And part of it is our fault. You know, I realized something. It wasn't broke when my parents raised me. I didn't need to fix it. And growing up, you always say, well, I want my kids to have better than what I have. Well, unfortunately, they don't. They don't have better than what I have. They could never, you know, there's no times like we had. We could stay outside. We could play. We had fun. They don't do any of that. That's why they're obese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're overweight. They play games too much. They're locked in. Their attention span is not there. Their eyesight is going bad early age because they're on these tablets and they're on these phones so much. There's so many things that are negative. I'm not saying that, you know, they can't be a kid, but we need to show them how to be a kid. It's not something that they can learn on their own. We have to usher them in. We have to get back to the things that worked for us. And unfortunately, the society is so poisoned and there's so many sick minds out there that you can't really do that anymore. You can't let a kid be outside and play the way we used to play.
Yeah. You know, Chris, that's interesting because as we sit here and talk about our childhoods and the happy memories that we have, what is this generation going to talk about 40 years from now?
Yep.
That's a tough one.
Yep. Their childhood, you know?
They're constantly bombarded with news and bad news and ugliness all day long. There is nothing fun anymore that's fed to them. Nothing.
And but things evolve, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to pivot over to the violence too, Judy. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to start out by saying that, you know, I remember being in school and, you know, you always had the aggressor, you know, the bully guy, you know what I mean? And they would come up to you and you would say, you know, give me your lunch money or give me your sandwich or whatever. And you say, you know, I don't know. I ain't giving you nothing. I'm not giving you anything. You know, drop dead or whatever. But then they say, okay, all right, meet me at the sawdust pile at 3 o'clock today after class, after school's over. Mm-hmm. Meet me. Now, everybody heard this threat. Now, this is on. Okay. So I used to be sitting there, man, I'm looking at the daggone clock on the wall behind the teacher. And man, and time ticking down. I'm thinking, okay, you know, okay, I'm going to get beat up. It's going to be me or him. And you sweat it out. That can be from like 10 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. As soon as you get out of school and you start walking, we had to go by this sawmill. All right. And there was a sawdust pile, you know, residual, whatever. And that's where the fights used to be. So all these people would be coming, following us. So you get to the sawdust pile, and then it was dukes up, you know what I mean? And then, but after the fight, win or lose, you got respect and you shook hands the next day, maybe not the same day, but the next day when you saw the guy, you may nod or whatever, whether you won or lost. But what's going on now with the automatic weapons and all this kind of stuff? And you can't tell me that it had to do with television. Because I'm looking, when I grew up, all right, we looked at Wagon Train. I know you're not going to remember this, Chris, Michelle. We looked at Wagon Train, Rifleman, Paladin, Have Gun, Will Travel. Yes. All those shows we looked at. And for Christmas present, I got BB guns, cap pistols, holsters. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I went hunting.
Dolls, race cars, mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yes, and I went hunting.
Keep you active, yeah. Right.
I went hunting early in the morning with my uncles. And on a bad day, we just shoot up. We just shoot up in the sky with a gun and just drop some migrating birds. But
that's all social activity. Yeah, but that's. Yeah. I mean, we had those social activities that these kids don't have. I mean, there's things to do. They just choose not to do them. You know, you can't always blame it on the news. I'm watching the news. Get your ass outside. Like, why are you in the house? You know, there's activities. They just. You know, I don't know. I mean, because it's COVID, it just got worse. But prior to COVID, you got bike riding. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the gyms. You have other athletics that you could do in school. They just choose not to participate.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, we had so many different things that we could do that were fun. Ice skating, roller skating, handball, volleyball,
And they still have it. I'm not sure the roller skating rings around much, but I know the Bronx
is. Yeah, and Chelsea. You could go skating.
Right, Chelsea, you can, exactly. Ice skating, you go to Prospect Park and wherever else they have it. But they do have these activities. It's just they have no interest in them because it's physical.
Yeah. Yeah, the holidays, we always went out, you know, there were things to do around each holiday. Mm-hmm. There were things to do right after school. We were always kept busy. So we didn't have the kind of insight where you could think about hurting someone all day long, or where you could think about where you're going to go to watch a fight or get into trouble.
Oh, you know, we had our things. Especially girl fights.
Yes. But we didn't have them. You know, I came of age in the 70s and the 80s. You know, we had Miami Vice, Barretta.
Yeah.
We had the Love Boat. You know, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know.
I had Kojak. Shows. I had Kojak.
Yes,
I
had Kojak.
And Good Times.
Yes, Good Times. That's right. Yeah, you know, Kojak. So the world has changed. It's just really changed to a point where there's no more respect, not even for the way children speak to their parents. I couldn't curse in my home. And I have a friend whose child curses in the home in front of the mother. Well, the mother curses. So we didn't curse in the home. There were things that we just didn't do, you know, even something
doesn't mean
as simple.
If your mama curses, it doesn't give you the right to curse. I curse. My
That's
son
right.
curse.
That's right.
Right. It's a matter of respect.
Not right.
If they don't respect their parents, they're not going to respect you either. Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, it's just a matter of respect and how you raise that child.
Yes.
That's right. That's
your kids are not your friends.
That's right. You know, and a lot of parents that I saw when I was teaching really didn't understand that. And they would come in dressed like the kids. I had a parent tell me that she was taking her child to club with her. They were going to a nightclub together. And I explained to her, I said, well, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that because older men will be hitting on your daughter. And she said, oh, that's okay. I'll be able to watch her.
What?
I just couldn't. I couldn't say anything. I just looked at her like, are you serious? But they were going to go clubbing together, and they do it regularly. And the daughter was maybe 15 to 16, and the mother was like 29, maybe 30. And they dressed alike. I saw it over and over again, you know. So that's the problem we have now. The parents are giving their children things instead of teaching them things. It's like, oh, you got an 85 instead of a 55. Okay, here's $20. You know, I never got rewarded for things that I did that were great all the time. Once in a while, maybe, but they're giving out rewards that are not needed at the time. You're not teaching children, you know, simple things, universal laws, how to respect each other, how to speak when you walk into a room, how to stand up for an elderly person who has a cane on the bus. Little things, you know, are not being taught. And that's a real
But the onus, now. I think the onus there is on the parents that are raising them, right?
Correct.
That's where that falls in. Yeah, Chris?
For me, the violence comes from them not knowing how to problem solve. They don't know how to resolve conflict without hurting each other. They don't, because they don't have conversations. They don't talk. They've never been taught to problem solve. And when you don't know how to listen, I used to, you know, when I grew up, the bully on the block, you had to fight him.
Yeah, you had to go through it.
Stand up to him.
Right of passage.
But like, but when you finished, if you win or lose, he respected you. Now they don't fight each other. And I'm not encouraging that kind of violence, but you got to learn how to problem solve. Sometimes you got to talk your way out of it. Everything they do, they take the easy way, which resorting to gun violence is not the easy way. It seems like that in the moment, but then you ruin two lives, destroy two families.
That's true. The thing is that, you know, what I fail to understand is why, you know, and how, you know, how do we get to this point from being like that to where we are now? You know, and I put the blame squarely on us and integration and the family unit. And I don't want to be too heavy in this because we want to continue to tell these stories. But I did want to interject and just say that there's been a paradigm shift that, you know, went by and we didn't get on the train. Something happened. And that's what the show is, you know, the way it was. What happened?
There's a lot of things we could attribute it to. One of the biggest things is the family structure is broken down.
That's what I'm saying. And why is that?
There's a lot of reasons. It's tough to stay in a relationship and a marriage. But the easy way out is to walk out, right? Everybody can do that, especially a guy who is unprepared to be a father, right? And a woman who knows they could get assistance from somebody else. I don't need you. I could get it from here. They never work through their conflict. And that is translated through their children as well. If the parents don't work through their conflict, the kid is never going to learn how to work through conflict. You're going to always say there's an easier way to do it. The easy way is to walk out the door and not take care of your kids. The easy way is to go downtown, get public assistance, and have somebody else in your life controlling how you take care of your kids. Those are the easy ways. The hard thing to do is to stay in a relationship when you have tough times and work through them. And for me, I'm married a long time. I got two kids. It hasn't been easy. I'm not going to sit here and say it hasn't. But we work through our problems. We try to resolve them. We try to give our... I want my kids to wake up and see both their parents and see that, hey, we were angry at each other yesterday, but we okay today, and we talk about it. And you got to try to do those things. And these kids don't see any of that. And all they do is see people quitting around them all over the place, just giving up. And that's a problem.
Yeah, it is. Among,
you know, people being in jail and all that other stuff. It's another show.
Yeah, it's another show. But I mean, you know, one thing, I went down south once, you know, I think this in the 90s. And some people, I'm not going to stereotype, and I don't want to go as far as that, to that extreme. But it seems like, you know, some people look at it as a badge of honor to be within the legal system, to have gone through the legal system or be identified, you know, for an offense. All right. That's the way it appears, you know. You know, I've just observed from where I came from that, you know, when I interact with some people, the younger generation, they look at it as a badge of honor to have been locked up, to have served some time. And I don't get that. Do you feel that from what you see? Do you see that? Yeah. That, you know, the younger generation looks at the legal system, having been, gone through the legal system or served some time, as a badge of honor.
Right. They like to brag about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. They do, which is, you know, why they have that mentality that they have. But that's, you know, that's that generation. I mean, the legal system, the way it's been for us, it meant different. It was a different meaning back then, you know, especially in the 60s. Walter, you can attest to that with the Black Panthers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
You know, and also a different meaning,
right? And who you could play with, and you know, if someone had been to reform school or even reform school, yeah. You know, they had those back in that time,
right?
Pussies and stuff like that. They put your ass in reform school,
right?
So I couldn't play with people like that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I couldn't either.
Right.
To this day.
Yeah, it's true, because I wasn't allowed to play with my cousins that were in that life. My mother was like, "I'll stop hanging out with them. You're going to become like them." You know, you know, that's just your parents or whoever guiding you in the right way, because if you don't, you end up with them like it is now. It's always been for us with Black people. If you're with that person, they get caught, you're caught too.
Whether they did it or not.
So that was the whole concept behind don't hang out with that person, because, you know, they go down, you're going down.
Right. And I still see the friends that I hung out with. We're friends on Facebook. All of my friends were always positive. And I never had a chance. I was kept so busy, even though, you know, in foster care, I still had friends that were positive influences, that we did things together that were exciting and that were fun and that were legal. Right. We went to Radio City Music Hall. We went to concerts. We, you know, we went to simple things like bowling. We went bowling.
Right, right. You know, you enjoyed life. You hang around.
Yes.
You know, it's what every you Saturday choose in life. You have choices. You make choices in life. You know, you're around positive people, you're going to do positive. You know, you're around millionaires, right, you're going to be a millionaire. It's just the choices that you make. And these, you know, I don't know. It's like the value. There's no value lately.
Right.
They have.
And they're not even trying to look for value. They want everything fast. Everything is fast. I mean, you can get something the next day if you order it the day before.
Right. Amazon. I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Immediate gratification.
But that's what I mean. The value of everything is lowered because nothing, you don't work hard for anything. So you don't learn to appreciate what you put. When you do a hard day's, when you go out and do something that was really tough and it kicked your butt, but you see the finished results, there's an appreciation there for that. Mm-hmm. And they don't do any of that. Everything is expected. It's handed over. And that's because we want to pacify people, not tell them the truth. You know, there's nothing wrong with losing. There's nothing wrong with failing a test or failing at something. It should push you to do better. But because we want to coddle and hug and for every little thing, sometimes you got to tell them, hey, pick your head up, toughen up, and go get them again. Go back at it. You can't shield them from every. I think that's what we were trying to do, shield them from everything that hurt us. And sometimes that is not the answer. They need to see. They need to understand what you went through to appreciate what you're saying to them. If they can't relate to it, they're not going to understand it. You have to make it relatable.
And it makes you feel better. It improves your self-esteem when you do something difficult and you come through it. It makes you feel good. And a lot of kids don't have that experience of feeling good after working or doing something hard or putting their best effort forward. There's no feeling there for that.
I come from a time where when grown folk came in the room, my mother said, y'all supposed to be seen and not heard. And
you know,
that's exactly right. How I roll. Yeah,
that's very true. That's right.
I'm the same way. There's a kid's room. We were always in another room. Our parents entertained a lot. They took us everywhere we went, everywhere they went, because who's going to watch 8 kids, right? So any family event, they made sure that there was a room for the children. Mm-hmm. You know, we couldn't be in up under adults.
And you never entered an adult conversation.
Yeah, and get in the conversation. Right. That's right.
Yeah. Never. Yeah, don't you hear grown folks talking?
Exactly.
That's
grown
folks
in here. What are you doing in here?
Yeah, I
want
to hear you. I don't want to see you.
That's right.
Exactly. They give you that look.
Yep.
You have to say a word. They just look and you knew to disappear. But now you got parents hanging out with their kids.
Right.
Yes.
Drinking and smoking with their children. Yeah,
right.
So why would they respect you?
Right.
They view you as a peer because that's how you're behaving. I'm not on the same level. Listen, I tell my kids all the time, you get over it. You ain't got to like me. You'll be okay. You will over it. I'm not here to, I want to have a great relationship with you, and I want you to love me. I want you to be happy, and I want you to be free around me. But I'm not here to be. I'm not your friend.
Right.
I'm your father. Mm-hmm.
Big
I'm
difference.
I'm not your friend.
That's right.
Yeah. Friendship bills.
Yeah.
That's
too many parents want to be their children's friends.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not your friend.
And that's when you lose that respect.
That's it. Exactly. Let me tell you what happened to me. All right. My younger son, right? And he was, you know, after he finished high school, he was supposed to go away to college. I said, look, go anywhere. You want to go to University of Hawaii? You want to go to University of Miami where your sister went? Doesn't matter. I don't care. Just, you got to go. All right. He said, no, I'm not going. I don't want to go. I can go to school nights here, you know, but he always had a little job, you know. So he stayed and he was going to community college and this and that. So, but all of a sudden, the Xbox came out, whatever, these games started coming out. And he stopped going to school. He dropped out and he would still work, but he wouldn't pay me rent. The deal was, if you didn't go to college and work, you're going to have to pay rent. All right. And try to get out of here as soon as possible. He started missing it every month, come the end of the month, first of the month. He didn't give me money for rent. All right. I didn't ask him for much, $200 a month. Okay. So this went on. And I said, look, I can't afford not to miss the mortgage. They don't want to hear any excuses from me. Okay. So what I'm going to do is this. And what I did, I went out, I helped them look for an apartment. I paid first month rent, first month security, gave him the keys, moved him out. I moved him out. That was tough love. I did not want to do it. That was my last son, you know, as far as being in the home. And he used to come by here to do his laundry, and he had lost weight. He got skinny. You know what I mean? But all of a sudden, he started picking up. He started adjusting. He got adjusting to paying bills, taking care of himself, his responsibilities. But that's what I call tough love. You got to be tough. Now I can look at him. He's a homeowner. He has kids. I mean, the other day he called me and said, Dad, guess what? I just rode 38 miles on a trail. I mean, but tough love.
Absolutely.
Where are people like that now? I mean, that's what we got to do as responsible parents. We have to push that down.
My father told me when I was probably 17, two men can't live here.
There you go.
You think you're a man, you got to go. What was I going to say to that? It's his house, it's his way. And you know what? As I got older, I started to learn and I understood. And when I was younger, I used to get upset because my pops would yell at the drop of a hat. You know, he was tough. He didn't smile a lot. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But he was preparing me for life. And when I got into my 20s, I started to have a better, like my early 20s, maybe 21, 22. I started to have a better understanding of who he was, how he was raised, the sacrifices that he had to make. And I started to have a really, really great relationship with him. Unfortunately, he would leave me shortly after that. But I was thankful that I got to that understanding and we were able to have that little bit of time. I think my daughter was turning one. She wasn't one yet. And you know, me and him had some great, great conversations. I was able to sit and I was proud that I was able to sit down with him and he saw me as a man and we could have that conversation. But before that, man, please, when I was in my teens, that phone couldn't ring past 7 o'clock. Your friends couldn't call in because my pop got up early. That phone, I would tell him to call at a certain time and I would pick it up on the half ring, like trying to get, and that guy would pick it up on the half ring and he still caught me and he would say something. And he said, hey, two men can't live here. You want to have your girls calling here? You want to do all of that? You got to get your own place. This ain't your place.
There you go. And, you'd be in the parlor. You know, that's a dad for you.
Yeah, our phone couldn't ring after 9 p.m.
That's right. My father would answer it.
He would answer it. What are you calling here? That's where I get it from. Don't call me after 9. Like, what do you have to talk about after 9 p.m., really?
That's right.
So that's where I get it from. So that's a habit that I learned from him as well. But it was just a matter of respect the household. This is his phone. This is his. He pays the bill. I get up at 5 in the morning. You don't go to work to pay these household bills. Respect.
And that's another issue. A lot of the kids have their own phone. So, you know, they're staying up 11, midnight, 1, 2 in the morning talking to their friends. That was unheard of back then. Our rules are just so different now.
They're very different.
Not our, I don't have any kids, but I taught, but the rules are different now. And there's a level of disrespect because of that.
Right.
And in line with us going way, way back, I want to go back now and just pivot over to, you know, going to an all-black high school. All right. As I said, down in North Carolina, all-black high school, you know, before integration. You know, our football team, all right, our educators, they cared, you know, and our football team was the best in the state. And guess who was the football coach? Coach Herman Boone. He was our football coach. Mm. All right. That was prior to him going to this college, high school in Virginia for the Titans. And the reason he left.
That's what I was going to say. The Titans.
The reason he left Williams. I went to E.J. Hayes High School. The reason Coach Boone left was because when they integrated the school, they wanted, you know, we integrated into the white school or whatever. They wanted him to be the assistant coach. With a record like he had, how would he, I mean, that's why he left Williamson and went on to Virginia. But Coach Boone was our high school coach. And I'll never forget, one time we beat a town called Washington, North Carolina. We beat that school 81-0. And one of the guys in the band, you know, I was in the band, I was a trumpet player. So one of the guys, the smallest guy in the band, you know, how you go when you're playing away game, you have, you know, the visitor side and then you have the home side. So for some reason, the smallest guy in the band was just rubbing it in. 81-0, what kind of town is this? Y'all guys are, you know. Next thing you know, you saw like a cloud of dust. All of those people started running towards the band. The football players had to surround us and take us to the bus. And once we got on the bus, we had to hit the floor because rocks and bottles and everything was flying. Mm-hmm. But that school spirit, you know, was something very, very special that I don't think it exists today. Maybe it does in certain places, but the spirit of all Black, I mean, really, I miss those days. I mean, it was something very significant in my life. It molded me. I was prepared to compete regardless of wherever I went. And when I came to New York, I was ready to compete because they made sure that I learned. And if you got a bad report card back then, all right, the report card day, everybody in the neighborhood know you getting your report card today. And they're going to say, well, you get on your car, your report card, boy. I got a few A's and this and that and blah, blah, blah. But if you got a bad report card, everybody in the neighborhood knew it, and everybody would pick on you. And then you got on top of that, your mother beat your ass.
Yeah,
that's how much we appreciated education back then.
Yeah, there was a sense of embarrassment if you know.
Yes,
came home
with everybody
a bad report
knew
card.
It. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays, kids brag. It's like, I got a 65. At least I passed. You know, that's
yeah. At least I got through.
Ridiculous.
You know? You wait till they get in the job market. Yeah, but you get into a global job market where you're competing with everybody, you know, from the Indians to, you know, the Chinese and all that kind of stuff. What are you going to do then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? So what I'm trying to say is that we were prepared with the integrated Black school. The teachers, the educators made sure that you knew. I mean, I even remember the 10th grade. I couldn't finish the 10th grade without one assignment that I didn't do. All right. And that was to recite Julius Caesar, Mark Anthony's point. What do you call it? Well, Mark Anthony, Mark Anthony went, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. Uh-huh. The good that men do does often lives after them. The bad is often turned into their bones. So you know what I'm talking about. I still remember
still
that point
remember
to the day.
Wow.
To the day. 50 years ago, I still remember that damn point.
Wow.
From
Must have been drilled into you.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Drilled into you.
I wouldn't have passed the 10th grade.
You know? Oh, damn.
That was the English class.
Some things just stay with you, right? The tormented ones.
Yeah. Yeah, Miss Joan Williams. I'll never forget her. Yep. Miss Joan Williams.
Wow.
I want to say this. What's important about all of our upbringing is that our parents let us know how hard it was for them and why they were doing the things that they did to us,
right,
for us. And we valued those stories that were passed down to us. We understood, we empathized with them. We don't pass those stories to our children now. That is part of the problem. They don't know how hard it was. They don't understand what the struggle was, because we thought, me as a parent, I'm thinking I want to shield them from that. And that was a mistake. They need to learn. They need to know the path of their grandparents, their great grandparents, their history. And part of that is what's lacking, a sense of belonging and a sense of worth. They don't have that because they don't know. Everything is just so easy for them, and they don't know the stories, and they don't know the struggle, how hard it was for people to get where we are. And we still got a long way to go.
We definitely do. We got to go back. We got to step back. You know, you heard that term, you know, you take two steps back to take one step forward.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that's basically what we got to do. All right. So that's the way I see it. But I do want to just skip. I don't want to skip. I want to just change over to the music, how the music has changed, just to touch on a little bit, because I know we're pushing up against the clock, guys. But, you know, during my time in the 60s, and, you know, when I was, you know, getting the first slow drag in, because that's what I used to look forward to on the weekends, you know, going to a house party.
So, like,
you know, my music was party. Like the Temps, Wilson Pickett, right. Otis Redding, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, but you know, the Smokey 60s Robinson, and the 70s had Supreme. The best music.
That's you right, know, they
that
did.
Was my music.
The Isley and the Brothers, unique thing about Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Everybody knew who was singing.
Yeah. Stephanie Mills. Right.
I mean, I hear you
really
laughing,
sing.
Judy. I hear you. I mean,
people who could sing.
That was my music. And that right. slow drag, you know that. You remember the slow drag?
Yes.
Yes.
Those were baby making music. That's why they had big families back then. Baby making music.
Yes.
What was some of your favorite music?
The music reflected the times and how we respected women. We respected each other.
Yes.
They weren't saying things that were derogatory towards one another. Right. Yeah, it was a little sexual,
correct.
But you know, it was about
making
love, to
and it was
your,
about love,
woman, right, and mm-hmm. cherishing your lady and respecting your elders. You know, songs like "I'll Always Love My Mama." Those are songs that stand the test of time.
Right. Yeah, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I could say the 70s,
and then the friendship rings. Remember, we used to have the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And, you had to give them a friendship ring for Christmas time, you know.
Time from an engagement ring, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I must say the 70s was my best era of music because it had more meaning. We had, I'll say, Sly Stone. And the 70s was the end of the era for the Vietnam War.
Oh yeah, Marvin Gaye.
So it had Marvin Gaye's.
Yeah. What's going
music,
on?
What's going on? And a lot of the artists and musicians were struggling at that time because when they first started out in the 60s, they got into bad deals. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they had to revamp themselves so their music was a lot more powerful. It had more meaning. You know, they talked about the war. They talked about what was going on, the end of the drug era, you know, the psycho, whatever that psychedelic thing was, you know, they were a little more sober. And the music, the 70s music, I mean, every band you could think of had great music coming out of the 70s.
Yeah. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Iconic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think there was a merger of the 60s and the 70s. You like, it was like no line really between those two.
Yeah.
What also stands out about that music and those musicians in that time, they played music.
Real
it wasn't, you know,
right.
this stuff is so disposable now.
Right.
Because
right.
they don't, you know, it's just, there's nothing to it. There's no body to it.
No.
There's nothing to it. These guys had horn sections.
They were instrumentalists,
I love that. Orchestras. Right. Yeah. Yes. You know, Isaac Hayes and all these people.
Right.
Barry White had an orchestra. Yes. Like, this was serious stuff. You know,
Sounds of Philadelphia. Yeah,
right. Totally okay. different.
Stephanie Mills, Anita Baker. Yeah. You know, the Pointer Sisters. You know,
a lot of great ones. And before I turn it over to Michelle to close us out, I do want to just tell you about this incident that happened to me when I was small. The cop came, policeman came over to see my mother, Ma. And I said, you know, we have a store. So we were a commercial business. So I guess he came to one, some prisoner broke out. So he came over to the house and came up, came to the store, asked for Ma, and Ma told him to come up, come in, because the store was connected to the house. So anyway, he first thing that came out of this cop's mouth, it was a white cop, Aunt Hannah. Right, that was my mom's name, but Hannah. So my uncle, Warren Henry, he used to drink, but work in the store all the time. He said, oh, I didn't know you were my cousin. And boy, Ma got scared. He called my Aunt Hannah. That's what they used to do back then. They didn't call you Mrs. or this right. or that. They call you Aunt Hannah or Sister this. They would not call you Mrs. They would not give you that respect. I do remember that. Hmm. So I wanted to share that with y'all guys. That's what they did.
Yeah. It was a different type of respect back then, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Raised all right. Definitely raised differently. So.
Okay. Yeah. But I wanted to share that with everybody. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. You know, we wanted to be a little late this week.
It's a great show to go back in time.
Back to the days.
Yes. There's nothing wrong with remembering, man.
It
brings a smile to your face.
Yeah, definitely.
You're just thinking about your friends and your family and the people you love, the people that are no longer here. It's always good to revisit that, man.
Definitely. Yeah, you're right, Chris.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
For sure.
And then we wanted to share that too, because the thing is, we're missing stories. Right. You know, as a people, we're missing stories. We need to tell more stories. We need to tell more because we are the history. Right. And like, you know, I think I'm a good representative of the '60s because you know I was there. I was raised during that period. Martin Luther King. And SLL, I forgot the initials of the Southern Leadership Conference. Right. They used to do a lot of planning in my town. If you look up Williamston, that's where I'm from, Williamston, mm-hmm. North yes. Carolina.
Mm. You see
that, that's where they did a lot of planning for the civil rights movement in my town.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a story. But you go there now, it's just drugs. The industry, everything is gone.
Right. Mm. Right.
You got people dying, getting shot every week. Mm-hmm. All right. When I was growing up, there was one killing. My whole time growing up, there was one murder.
Wow. Yeah. And that's what's missing now. You know, we had the National Council of Negro Women. We had the Links. We had, we had so many different clubs that you could send your children to, Jack and Jill. There were a lot of different things that you could do. And, you know, we just don't have that anymore. You know,
sure, I remember being in playing baseball with the PAL, the Police Athletic League.
Police Athletic League.
You know,
right.
All kinds of stuff we used to do, and they would come into the community. We had a center to go to. You had the Boys and Girls Clubs, but these things were prominent throughout the community. Now it was one or two. You might find one or two.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm playing slow motion football. You ever play that, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. I used to love slow motion football.
Yep, absolutely.
Like
an two hand touch, all kinds of stuff.
Yep. Flag football.
Yep.
How many people in our audience even heard of slow motion football? Right?
I've never heard of it.
I never heard of that.
Y'all
taught me something new today.
Wow.
Slow motion football. Yeah, we got that from when they do a replay and they slow it down so you can see exactly what went on. Yeah. It was a parody of that.
Yes.
Basically.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. But out in the yard, you know. Yeah.
Right. You be on the field and you were your favorite player. If you were on defense, you were Mean Joe Green or whoever.
that
you loved.
Okay, gotcha. I didn't know it was called that.
we tried to mimic the game as much as we possibly could to get it authentic.
That's true.
Okay.
Guess they call it what, fantasy football now?
No, it was no fantasy football. I mean, when we played full speed, you got your
head blocked though. Yeah,
that's right. You see a light.
Wow, with no fantasy.
Listen, I don't know how many times I was concussed and didn't know it.
That's right.
Yes.
We played for real. That slow motion football was something that we did every now and then.
Wow.
That wasn't the usual thing that we did.
Those were the good old days, right?
Those were the good old days, and what happened to them? And we got to explore that. We've been exploring that, guys. But
this generation needs to create their good old days, you know? They got to figure it out.
And hopefully they can build on what we discussed today, some of the stories that we told today, everybody. Yes. You know, hopefully, you know, they can grab that, you know, and hang on to it and say, damn, I didn't know it was like that back then, man. You know, we can recreate that, you know, or evolve into something totally different, but as positive as that was.
Right.
They need to learn to smile more and love each other more.
That's
I love my friend. I loved my friends growing up. Still have many of them to this day.
Still do. Right. That's right. Still do.
That's right.
Yep.
Yes.
We cared about each other.
That's right.
Definitely. That's right. And we knew each other's families too.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's right. Had to.
Right. You used to eat over there sometime, you know?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You weren't allowed to be in somebody's house without your parent knowing who they are.
That's right.
That's right. You couldn't come in. You didn't know them. That's right.
All right. But I think it was a great show. Yeah. I'm going to get ready to turn it over to Michelle. Yes. I really enjoyed this and brought back a lot of memories. I was glad to share them with y'all guys.
Yeah.
I am the historian of the team.
Right.
Man, because I am the oldest. I have to admit, but only by a little bit, a few years.
And you have my father's name.
You had to put that up there for us.
That was a low one, right?
Yeah.
Was that a dig?
And you sound like him. You sound like him.
Here you go.
Everybody gets a free Walt Weekly t-shirt, except Carl. No, Judy.
Oh, boy. Look at this guy.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry, but it really is true.
That's all right. Mm-hmm. That's all right.
All right. You got it.
That's a good thing, though.
Yes, it is. It's a good thing.
Thank you.
Yes, it is.
Thank you to our host, Walter Latham, for this great show. It was fun. Definitely thank you to our live audience for joining us, and our panel members, Christopher and Judy, for joining us on our Friday Live. You can follow us at www.thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook at The Walt Weekly, Twitter Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Pandora, and other streaming platforms. Thank you all. We look forward to seeing you all next week, Friday, same time, same station. Have a great weekend.
All right, please follow us on all the platforms, please.
Right.
We appreciate it. Y'all guys have a great weekend.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks.
Stay safe and blessed.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.